I slam bodily into a bulkhead 100 meters through and past the bridge. Dazed. Can't find Severo. I call him over the comm. He groans something about his ass. Maybe he did shit himself. We can't hear it because of our helmets, but the ship is filled with howling as the vacuum of space sucks crew members to their deaths. It really doesn't suck them out through the shattered windows, so much as the internal pressure of the ship pushes them out. Either way, blues and oranges and golds fly screaming into space. The obsidians go silently. Not that it matters. Space makes all silent in the end. My left arm spits sparks. My pulse cannon is shredded. Inside the suit, my arm hurts like hell. I have a concussion. I puke inside my helmet. Fills it with a bitter stench, stings the nostrils. But I keep my feet, and my right arm works well enough. View shield is cracked. I stumble as I'm sucked toward the bridge, too. I crawl back through the holes I made in the walls, make it to the bridge to find the place in chaos. Crew members hold onto anything to prevent themselves from being sucked into the cold darkness. A gold girl flips past me and flies out the bulkhead. Finally, red lights flash. Emergency bulkheads slam shut all over this part of the ship to cut the pressure leak. One begins to close behind me, reinforcing a wall that I crashed through. I hold it up when I see Severo coming. The metal groans against the robotic arm of my starshell. Severo dives through just in time, and the door slams shut. Bridge is locked down, with us inside. Perfect. The pressure wind dies behind us as the durosteel slats slide over the demolished viewports. The ship's officers and crew pick themselves up from the ground, gasping for breath. But there is none. Oxygen and pressure are still being pumped back into the room. So those with breathing masks, the golds, obsidians and blues, watch placidly as the few pink valets and orange technicians on the bridge flop like fish, gasping for air that is not there. One pink vomits blood, his lungs exploding in his chest because he tried to hold his breath. The blues watched the deaths in horror. They have never seen men die. They're used to seeing blips on the scanners disappearing, perhaps a distant ship exploding or gouting flame as it is boarded by obsidians and greys. Their understanding of the mortal coil is being adjusted. The obsidians and the gulls don't react to the scene. Some of the greys attempt to administer aid, but it is too late. By the time the pressure and oxygen levels are normalized, the low colors are dead. I'll never forget those faces. I brought them this. How many families will weep because of what I did here? In anger, I stomp my metal boot on the steel deck. 3 times. And those who did nothing while their allies died turned to see Severo and me in our killing suits. Oh, how those gold and obsidian faces finally emote. An obsidian charges us with a force spike. Severo hits him once, crushing the man's face with a metal fist. The other 4 link together and attack us, keening one of their hideous war chants. Severo meets them, delighted to finally be the biggest in the room. I engage a squad of greys who scramble for their weapons. This is the way it goes. We're men of metal fighting disorganized men of flesh. Like steel fists punching the inside of a watermelon. I've never killed men with so little regard, and it frightens me how easy I find it in war. There is no ambiguity here, no violation of moral creed. These people are war colors. They kill me, or I kill them. It's simpler than the passage. Simpler that I don't know them, that I don't know their brothers and sisters, that I use metal instead of my own flesh to drive them through death's dark door. I am good at it. Better by worlds than Severo. And that terrifies me above all else. I am the Reaper. Whatever doubts I had in myself fall away as I feel the stain creeping over my soul. We do our best to save the blues. The bridge is large, but there aren't many obsidians or graves with projectile and energy weapons. No reason for them here. No one has ever come through the viewport. Two female gulls with razors are the true menace. One is tall and broad, the other has a quick face that is pinched with desperation as she charges us. With their razors, they could even cut our suits in half, so Severo blasts them from a distance with his pulse cannon, overloading their aegises and splashing the energy onto armor where it overloads the pulse shields and eats into the armor, melting the gulls. This is why they control technology. Humans, no matter their color, are fragile as doves in the meat grinder of war. My enemy's dead. I turn now to the blues in the pits. "Is there a captain?" I ask. In my suit, I stand nearly a meter taller than them. They're still staring at the mess we made of the others. I must be a walking nightmare. Arms spitting sparks, suit half-ruined, holding a terrible razor. "I don't have all day to threaten and stomp. You are erudite men and women. This is not your ship. You merely occupy it for the gold who commands it. I now command it. So, is there a blue captain about?" The captain survived. He's a placid, clean-looking man, more limbs than torso, with a fresh gash on his face that pains him terribly. He trembles and sniffles, holding the wound as though his face would fall apart were his hands to leave it. Mother would have called him a shit-eating ninny, Pris. Io would have taken a different tack, so I stand over him and speak quietly. "You are safe," I say. "Do not attempt anything rash." I pop my helmet. The sick drips out. I tell him he's to go to the corner and strip off his star badge of rank. Trembling, he doesn't get a chance to obey. Severo lurches forward, takes his badge and picks him up and moves him like a doll. A long-faced, proud-shouldered woman with deep olive skin snorts at the demotion. Her gaze is peculiarly shrewd for a blue. Bald, like the rest, with digital azure tattoos swirling not only along crown and temples, but over hands and neck. Severo lopes back to me. "Severo, stop pissing around."
"I like being big."
"I'm still bigger." He tries flipping me the crux in his suit, but the mechanical fingers aren't so agile. I give orders to the blues in the tech pits that our friends in the Stork are to be given access to one of the hangar bays. After settling themselves back into their stations, they obey. All here are loyal because I have them under my power. But throughout the ship, who knows? They may be loyal to the Sovereign. Or they may only be loyal to the man who rules this ship. It'd be foolish to think they all operate under the same creed. I'll have to make them. I watched the Stork coast into a hangar bay on a display. She's barely held together by her bolts. Two leechcraft festoon her. My howlers will have to fight off the squads of killers they contained. They might manage, but if the vanguard's obsidians and greys besiege them in the hangar, then all is lost. Sounds come now from the bulkhead that connects the bridge with the rest of the ship. A deep spine hissing. The door glows red from heat. A small pupil in the center of the thick grey durosteel. Obsidians or grey marines, no doubt led by some gold, endeavour to reclaim the ship. Should take them a little while. "Is there a holocam in the hall?" I ask the blues. They hesitate. "Black space, you daft gas bags!" curses the female blue I noted before. She pushes another blue out of the way and syncs her tattoos with the console. A holo appears in one of the screens, confirming my fear. Golds lead the party, attempting to make their way onto the bridge. "Show me the engine room, the life support nexuses, and the hangar bay," I demand. She does. Again, Golds lead parties of grey marines and obsidian slave knights to secure the ship's vital systems. They'll try to wrest control of it away from me. Worse, they'll try to board or destroy the Stork to kill or capture Mustang and my friends. "Who wants this ship?" I ask severely. I stalk along the raised command podium, kicking aside a body in my way and looking down at the communications blues in their pit. They dodge my gaze, two women no older than I, faces pale and fresh, like morning snow, now stained with tear tracks and grime. Wide cerulean eyes, raw-rimmed and shot with red. They've seen friends die today, and here I rage selfishly, acting as though this is my triumph. It's so easy to lose myself. "Never forget what I am," I remind myself. "Never forget." We're being hailed by a dozen ships and the Citadel Ground Command. What's happened? They want to know. Torch ships and destroyers coast warily toward us. I open a closed-circuit comm channel to the whole of my ship. "Attention, crew of the vessel formerly known as the Vanguard, hereafter known as the Pax." I pause dramatically, knowing that any good song, any good dance, is a game of tension leading to a climax of sound and movement. Severo can't stop grinning boyishly at me. He looks like an imp in the huge suit, head so small with his helmet off. He makes a big motion with his hands to try to make me laugh. I shake my head at him. Now isn't the time. "My name is Darrow Au Andromedus, Lancer of the Martian House Augustus, and I have claimed this vessel as the spoil of war. It is mine. This means, per societal rules of naval warfare, that your lives are mine. I am sorry for that, because it means you will likely all die. Your lives have been dedicated to one vocation or another: electronics, astral navigation, gunnery, janitorial service, lighting and repair, martial combat. My vocation is conquest. They teach us it in schools. And in school, they instructed me on the proper method of invading, seizing, and possessing an enemy warship. After one has captured the bridge of an enemy-held vessel, the procedure taught to us is simple. Vent the ship." Severo activates the hidden console secured in the back side of the navigation display. One only Golds can access. The blues recoil in surprise. It is like going into a man's kitchen and showing him a nuclear bomb hidden under his sink. The console scans Severo's golden sigil and blinks gold. All he need do is push in a code, and the entire ship will open to space. 20,000 men and women will die. "We made these ships so we could empty them. Why? Not because we distrust your loyalty, in fact, we rely on that, but because there are still..." I look at the roster one of the blues gives me. 61 Golds on board. They are loyal to the Sovereign. I am her enemy. They will not obey me. They will sabotage the ship, attempt to take the bridge. They will rally you, abuse your loyalty, and lead you to certain death. Because of them and their hatred of me, you will never see your loved ones again." "There is yet another complication. Beyond this hull, the Sovereign wonders what happened here. Soon she will realize the pride of her armada no longer belongs to her. It is mine. Her praetor's ships will vomit out squadrons of leechcraft carrying legions of obsidians and grey marines. They will be led by gold knights who want my head, fully prepared to kill all in their path. If I vent you into space, there will be no one to stop them from killing me. So, you see, you are my salvation, and I am yours. I will not sacrifice 20,000 of you to kill 61 of my enemies. I chose this vessel above all others because of its crew, the best the society can offer. To me, you are not expendable. So what I ask of you is this. Choose me as your commander, and overwhelm those Goals who think you expendable. You have my permission, my warrant, and the badge of the Arch-Governor of Mars, Nero Au Augustus, to capture or kill your Gold commanders for me. Take their weapons and subdue them, then make fast the ship against the invaders who come to destroy us. Do it now. If you wait, they will kill you. I will know the first men and women to rise up. As your new master, I will reward you. The Arch-Governor will reward you. Do it now, for I have just opened every armory throughout the ship. Seize weapons and neutralize the tyrants. A heavy silence as the first sparks of revolution are struck. Severo comes close. That was rousing. Too democratic, I whisper. I don't think autocratic democracy counts. Severo wrinkles his nose. You did threaten to vent them into space. Threaten? I thought I implied it rather smoothly. Smooth as gravel, dipshit. Severo cackles a bit too enthusiastically and slaps his leg with his mech hand, denting the metal there. He winces, then looks up at me slightly embarrassed. Slag off! The door behind us begins to hiss. I turn to look at the glowing bulkhead. My enemies have brought a drill to assail me. My hands shake from the adrenaline. I feel the weight of dozens of blue eyes. The red of the door deepens, spreading. We haven't long. My razor ripples into killing form, long and terrible. Company soon, I say. I glance at Severo, who has been distracted by one of the hollow screens. I order the blues to take shelter. They're doing it, Severo murmurs. Gory hell. Taro, come look. He cycles through live visuals of oranges and blues ransacking the armories. Some greys help them. Others stand by, unsure of their prerogative, even as others shoot at the tide of their fellow shipmates. But no bullets can hold back this tide. They take weapons, run sloppily through halls, swelling their ranks. The roughest lead, not blues, but orange hangar workers and mechanics, along with greys. One I recognize. The middle-aged corporal on my ship at the academy, the one who escaped with us. He directs a score of men and women into the stateroom of a Gold. They subdue him respectfully. That peaceful accord is not far spread. Three powerful squads of Golds, leading Obsidians and Greys, marshal in the life support rooms at the engines 5 kilometers back to the aft of the ship and just outside the bridge door. Those outside the bridge door number 4 Golds and 6 Obsidians. 10 Greys load weapons behind them. "We're still going to have company," I say. They'll be coming through the door at any moment. Sparks spit from the inside of the bulkhead as their heat drill gets the better of the door. Metal drips inward, bubbling to the floor. The blues shiver in terror, and Severo and I square ourselves up and don our helmets, preparing for the new onslaught. Again, the stench of sick fills my nostrils. I tell the blues to hide in the communications bay. They'll be safe there. A comm light suddenly blinks on a console near me. Instinctively I answer. A voice like thunder sends tremors through my bones. There is no visual.
"Can you hear me?"
it asks.
"I can."
I glance over at Severo. Whoever calls is using a voice amplifier that sounds like the breaking of thunder,
Severo shrugs as if he hasn't a clue who it is. Who is this?
Are you a god?
A god?
An eerie quiet settles in me. That is no voice amplifier. I should have known by the cold, sluggish accent. I choose my words carefully, remembering my lore.
I am Darrow Au Andromedus of the Sunborn. You took the vessel, and you are not yet praetor. How?
I flew in through the bridge.
Alone? From the abyss?
With a companion.
I will come to meet you and your companion, godchild.
The Blues look to one another in terror. They mouth something.
Stained.
The heaviness of fear settles on my shoulders. Severo and I peer around the bridge, as though the beast were hiding somewhere in the shadows. More of the door peels away, dripping inward like some glowing red, rotting fruit. Then one of the Blues gasps, and we glance back at the HC monitor to see the cameras in the halls outside the bridge door relaying a scene of horror. He runs at them from behind as they prepare to make entry into the bridge. An obsidian, but larger than any I've ever seen. But it's not just his size. It's how he moves. A dread creature stitched from shadow and muscle and armor, flowing, not running. Perverse. Like looking at a blade or a weapon made flesh. This is a creature that dogs would flee, that cats would hiss at. One that should never exist on any level above the first tier of hell. He smashes into the kill squad from behind with two pulsing white iron blades that extend out of his armor 3 feet from his hands. The greys he simply runs through, crushing them into the walls with his shoulders, splintering their bones. Then he starts the real killing. It's so savage I have to look away. The heat drill continues melting the door of its own accord, and in its center forms a hole. Through it I can see men and women dying. Blood sizzles on the overheated metal. When the stain is done, he's bleeding from a dozen wounds, and there's only one gold left. She stabs him with a razor, piercing his dark armor through the breastplate. He twists his body, locking the blade in, and then clutching it when she lets the blade relax into a whip. Then he grabs her by her helmet, her golden armor glittering under the hall's lights. She tries to escape, tries to scramble away, but like a lion with a hyena in its jaws, he needs simply squeeze. When she is gone, he lays her gently on the ground. Tender now that he's brought her a good death. Severo involuntarily steps back from the door.
Mother mercy!
The stained stands on the other side, the door between us slowly melting from the center. When the hole in the door is the size of a torso, he removes his helmet. A hairless, pale face stares at me. Eyes black, wind-weathered cheeks armored with calluses like the hide of a rhinoceros. Head bald except for a meter-long white shock of hair that hangs to his mid-back. We lock eyes, and he addresses me.
God child Andromedus, I am Ragnar Valaris, the stained firstborn of my mother, Alia Snowsparrow. Of the Valkyrie Spires north of the Dragon's Spine, south of the Fallen City, where the Winged Horror flies. Brother of Sephi the Quiet, Breaker of Thanos, which once stood by the water. And I make you an offering of stains.
He splays out his gigantic blood-stained hands, and then reaches through the door with his right hand. His iron blades retract into his armor. The razor still juts out from his ribs. I'm pissing my bloody damn suit.
Well, frag me blind.
Severa mutters.
Do it, Darrow, before it changes its mind.
Taking my helmet off, I step forward. I want this one. Ragnar Valaris, well met. I see you wear no badge. Do you have a master?
I bore the mark of the Ash Lord, and was to be presented as a gift with this great vessel to the family Julii. But you took this vessel, and so you have taken me.
The Julii?
A gift for their betrayal of Augustus, no doubt.
And did he just use a bureaucratic loophole to justify killing his master's men?
If there's irony in his voice, I can't find it.
But why would he do that?
Do those black eyes of his know me? Stained cannot use tech other than military materiel. He could never have seen me before, yet his hand remains, waiting to grip mine.
Why do you do this? I ask. Is it the Julii? They trade my kind.
I had forgotten. It is Julii ships that carry obsidian slaves across the abyss. They know to fear the speared son of Victra's family crest. He has not practiced at hiding his hate. It is cold as the ice the man was born into.
Will you accept these stains, godchild?
He asks, leaning forward, voice plaintive, a strange worry creasing the corners of his mouth. Golds did this after the Dark Revolt, the only uprising to ever threaten their reign. We took their history, took their technology, wiped out a generation, and gave their race the poles of planets, the religion of the Norse, and told them we were their gods. A few hundred years later, I stand looking up at one of their most terrifying sons, and wonder how he can think of me as a god.
I accept these stains in my name, Ragnar Valaris.
Terrified, I reach forward and, with superheated metal surrounding our arms, clasp hands, nearly equal in size, though mine is sheathed in metal. I take the blood that his hand spreads to mine and wipe it over my exposed brow.
I accept their burden and their weight.
Thank you, Sunborn. Thank you. I will serve on the honor of my mother and her mother before her.
I have friends aboard the Stork in Hangar Bay 3. Save them, Ragnar, and I will owe you a debt.
Yellow teeth are revealed as he smiles, and from him undulates a war chant deeper than the ocean at storm. It fills the halls with dread, fills me with joy and fear and primal curiosity. What did I just gain?
Chapter 22. Fire Blossom. My body trembles in the aftermath of the giant's departure. Steadying myself, I turn back to the Blues, who stands transfixed, unsure whether to look at me or the HC displays or the scanners that show the Sovereign's men of war encircling us.
You have nothing to fear here, I say. The captain of this ship was demoted because he left his viewports open. Foolishly. Rank does not excuse mistakes. I wish for a new captain. We haven't much time, so I will decide in 60 seconds.
The proud-shouldered Blue comes forward past her fellows. At first, I thought the tattoos on her hands featured floral lines. Then I noticed a stream of mathematical notations. The Larmor formula. Maxwell's equations and curved spacetime. Wheeler-Feynman absorber theory, and 100 others that even I don't recognize.
Give me the badge and I'll carve you a hole back to Mars, boy.
Her voice has no inflection. It is flat, precise and lazy all at once. Emotion bled out of it till only the letters and sounds of the words remain
like equations in the air. I swear it on my life.
Boy, I ask.
You're half my age. Shall I call you Lord Boy, or will you be offended?
Severo raises an eyebrow, flummoxed at the Blue's bland audacity.
Forgive her, Dominus, another Blue says smoothly. She is an ensign with...
I hold up a hand. What's your name, Blue?
Orion Z. Aquarii.
That's a boy's name, Severo says.
Is it? I hadn't noticed.
Blues can be sarcastic.
My sect intended for me to be a man. I surprised them.
What sect? Severo asks.
She has no sect. She was appropriated by the Copernican sect, but dismissed shortly thereafter for obvious reasons.
That officious Blue interrupts again.
She's a docker.
Orion flinches. She swivels on the other Blue. Her voice does not rise.
And what are you but a pedantic little gasp of a fart, Pelos? You see, Pelos explains placidly, she is a docker. Emotional metrics are unmanageable. Not her fault. She is a product of her greasy environment.
Bolly that, she says, stepping forward quickly. She punches Pelos in the face. He wails, falling backward like he's never been hit before. Likely because he hasn't. Why would a Blue hit another Blue? They're test takers, math makers, star charters, not fighters.
I like the rude one, Severo says.
Wait, Dominus, I desire the ship.
Another Blue slides forward, staring at Pelos on the ground.
I deserve it. Orion is no more than a laggard. Her mastery of astrophysics leaves much to be desired, to say little of her understanding of extraplanetary mass kinetics. She didn't even attend the observatory.
Another Blue pushes forward.
Forget Arnas. He's a dotterhead at astrophysics, and his assumptions in theoretical calculus are imprudent at best. I was second in command of this vessel for 6 months under the Ash Lord. I served upon it while it was in its dry berth. Logic supports the maneuver to place me as your captain, Dominus.
The Armada's ships continue to hail us over the comms. Men of war slide closer. Inside their bellies, brave men and women will be donning suits of armor. They'll board leechcraft and shoot into space to land on my hull, burrow their way through, praying that they will make it home to have a meal made by their mother, their spouse. All that while my Blues shove and push to lead my ship, howling insults at one another's math skills and academic integrity.
"Don't listen to either of them, Dominus," shouts a woman in that slow accent. She falls to her knees. "My name is Virga Z. Siderta. I have studied the physics of astral drift in the Midnight School, far superior to the observatory. I hold, among others, a doctorate on dark matter and gravitational lensing. Let me guide your vessel, Dominus. To decide in favor of another would be specious and worse, illogical.
These Blues should have used their logic and seen that I look only at the woman who does not kneel like the rest of them. Orion, the first to speak, still stands, shoulders square, long neck unbent. Her dialect is low-born, sharper, and more worldly than the dreamy lingo of these academics. Likely from the dock city of Phobos, or the string docks near the Academy's Cannes. If she really is a docker who didn't go to the observatory or the midnight school, I wonder about the story of how she came to be on the bridge in the first place.
What about all that noise? I ask Orion, gesturing to the Blues.
They are full of batshit, Dominus.
She taps a slender finger against her temple.
I am not full of batshit.
She smiles and nods to the displays where the other torch ships creep closer.
And you're running out of time.
I glance to the scanner stations where alerts signal the secretive launch of 2 leechcraft from the Sovereign's nearby men of war and cruisers. I know I can do this, otherwise I would not have spoken out. Give me a chance. I nod to Sevra, and he tosses her the captain's winged star. Get us to our fleet. Rules of engagement? She asks me. Minimal casualties, I say. We are good. The Sovereign is the tyrant. That is how this must play. Aye, Dominus. I watch with Sevra as Orion takes command of my ship and sets orders to rendezvous with Augustus's ships beyond the Rubicon beacons. The squabbling stops as soon as I appoint Orion. They know their chance has passed, so they slip into their comfortable roles, as though they wished they'd never left them. Their blue sigils look like tridents against their forearms in this dimmed lighting. There's a curious remoteness to blues. An island people in the abyss of space. They were designed to survive the long journeys from Luna without mutiny. So they share. They share the same oxygen, the same food, the same bunks, the same routines, the same pits, the same commanders, the same lovers, the same sects, the same ambitions. To do their job with precision and rise high through merit so that they might honor their sect. I open a comm channel to the rest of the fleet and the satellites of Luna. They can't stop the signal. Not of this ship. Our arrays are as sophisticated as any in the Sovereign's Navy. Sons and daughters of society, this is Darrow Au Andromedus of the House Augustus. I bring terrible tidings. Tonight, your Sovereign has broken the compact of our society. As my master, Arch-Governor Nero Au Augustus, slept under her protection, she made attempt upon his life, the lives of his family, and those of his praetors and aides. Along with the Bellona, she attempted the illegal and immoral murder of more than 30 peerless scarred. She failed. In retaliation, I have taken one of her flagships, and I am now besieged, with my life, as well as those of my master and his family, at risk. If we do not fight back, we will die. If we surrender, we will die. I have not vented the ship. Those aboard have seen the merit of my cause and have allied themselves with a family that would resist the power-hungry tyrant, Octavia Auloon. Close enough to the truth. Hours ago, our Sovereign told me to betray my house, to betray my vows. Like her father before her, she is drunk on power, and now believes herself empress. She told us to bow. Witness now our reply. I turn the comm off. Mr. Pellis, as you will, Orion declares. Let the bastards have it when they come. She activates her own tattoos and sinks into digital speak with the rest of the crew. The bridge is silent. A second ticks by. Another. On the HC, I watch 3 greys shoot a gold in the head. In the hangars, oranges huddle to the side as golds lead war colors against the downed stork. Then Ragnar arrives in the hangar, and the oranges rally around him, as do armed reds who followed him from the halls. Many die. Something furious grips these colors. And though they die, I feel the flickering of rebellion as I give them permission to do what they've wanted to do their entire lives. It's there, even if you never see it till the end. That spark of individuality, of freedom. The door of the stork pops open, and Mustang charges out with my howlers to aid the low colors and Ragnar, though even the Telemannuses keep their distance from the monstrous man. Beyond my vessel, the enemy ships finally show their menace. The scanners swell with red. Enemies, leechcraft freshly split from the bellies of the armada around us, streak through space to find our hull. They aim to take us by storm. Orion opens broadsides. It's so beautiful. Several murmurs. I stand in silence. Railgun payloads slam through leechcraft, shearing away metal and men, only to carry on and smash into the hulls and shields of the same men of war that launched the leechcraft. My newly appointed captain paces the command plank, arms crossed. My 5-kilometer war vessel begins a roll, cycling through her banks of railguns as they hurl death into the face of the Sovereign's fleet. Orion half turns to face me, smirking for all to see. "Now, about carving that path, Dominus." She orders the engines to pound black matter. We shoot forward through the remains of 2 men of war. My bridge is silent but for the buzz of technical orders. Missiles flash in concert beyond our hull. We deploy our flak screens, as the enemy has now deployed theirs, rendering missiles worthless. An aura of light surrounds us like a no-man's land. Railgun ordnance smashes into our hull, though we do not feel the reverberations here on the bridge. Our equipment does not spark. Wiring does not fall from overhead compartments. This ship is the pinnacle of 700 years of design. Severo nudges me. "We might just gory well make it." The armada around us is massive. Beyond massive. It was brought here to make the gathered lords and all their fleets out past the Rubicon beacons tremble, and still it is not half the combined fleet. But now that very armada quakes from the inside like a corpulent body as some alien chews its way out of the host. We make our escape from the armada in quick fashion. They do not pursue us past the Rubicon beacons, where they are joined by our small fleet, as well as those of the Cordovan and Telemannus, the Norvo. I hope more will flock to our banners after today's last surprise. I examine our wake, naval detritus. Bodies of men and women float behind my vessel. They came out of cracked and punctured ships. Some are still alive, but will soon freeze or suffocate. More dead in my path. How many will it take? I leave Orion, the bridge. Severo and I find our way to the engineering bay, where we have oranges cut us out of our mangled suits. We rush from there to the hangar, a vast metal depot scattered with ships, equipment, and now broken men. Yellows dart about aiding the wounded and carting them off to the medbay, greys and oranges helping carry. Weed prods several unarmed gulls with his razor. Pebble and Harpy help the yellows. My eyes search frantically for Mustang. I find her under one of the battered stork's wings, speaking with her father. A long wound mangles her left arm. I don't mention it. They were boarded by a leechcraft and managed to shear the other off when entering the hangar. "We've put the bulk of the Sovereign's fleet behind us," I tell Augustus. "Where's Quinn?" Severo asks sharply. "Did they get her to the medbay yet?" Mustang does not answer. Instead, she looks to the ramp of the stalk, where Roke descends, carrying Quinn in his arms. She's pale, long, and lifeless. Severo does not move, does not speak. His nostrils flare as a breath catches in his chest, a pitiful sob locked tight in the boy who never cries. He goes numb, ghost-like, and I reach for him, but he pulls away, not in anger, but in confusion, as though he was told the future once, and this reality is not what was promised. He stumbles backward, away from our body, looking around, before turning and fleeing the hangar. Roke walks past me with Quinn. His face is slack and tired. He wants to say something bitter, but he bites his tongue and just shakes his head at me. He still does not know why I attacked him in his room before the gala. And now this. I've never seen him so broken. "Look at her," he tells me. "Darrow, look at your friend." I look at Quinn and feel everything go quiet. Here she is, peaceful in death. Why can we not breathe life back into her? Why can we not simply restart the day, do everything right, save the ones we love? Roke moves away with Quinn toward the hangar's transparent pulse field, which opens into space. He's bent and broken as he walks to the stars to push his lost girl out among them. I grab the jackal when I see him exit the stalk, demanding to know what happened. She died, he tells me. It's just that. He's tired like the rest of us. He rolls down his sleeves. I won't apologize. I did my best. Of course you did, I say, shaking myself. Of course. He asks me where my helmet cam is. I stare at him. The footage, he says. Do you even understand what you just did? He waves around. Two men took one of the greatest vessels ever built. Golds will flock to our banners. All it takes is my media and your story. I tell him absently, almost forgetting the data recorder the Sons of Ares put in my tooth to record the bomb blast. It's activated with a clench of my molars. I clenched them as soon as I sat down in the Sovereign's office. I reach inside my mouth and delicately pry it loose of the gums. It is smaller than a hair. The jackal's eyes light up. Where did you get this? He asks. Black market, I say. Sovereign has damned herself. Use the recording. Make this war a fair fight. I leave the jackal there, and am about to leave the clean-up to others when I notice the oranges and low colours watching me. I can't simply lead with violence. So I join Pebble and Harpy, and lend my aid in helping the wounded to the medbay. The rest of the howlers help too. And Mustang. And eventually, even Victra. After the last grey is loaded on a gurney, I stand in the empty hangar. Augustus has gone to the bridge. The jackal avoids the telemanuses who accompany him, and instead makes for the communication hub. I'm left alone. Roke is gone. I don't know what to do. Where to go? Blood and scorch marks stain the deck. I look at my hands. These are the consequences of my actions, and I feel so alone. I lean my head against the cold metal wall. She comes from behind. I don't think she says my name. I'm not sure. I just smell her damp hair as her arms wrap around me, squeezing tightly. I know you're tired, Mustang says quietly, but Several needs you. What about Roke? I ask, turning to face her. So much lingers unsaid between us. So many questions unanswered. So many crimes left unforgiven. So much anger, and perhaps still the faint flicker of something more. I feel it as she cups my neck and lets the strength in her fingers lend itself to me. Not now, she says. Roke blames me, and he should. They all should blame me. And it's only going to get worse. Chapter 23. Trust. I find him in a communal washroom. He's earned one of the staterooms that the others are claiming for the return voyage to Mars, but that's not how he thinks. This is still the boy you hid in the horse. No, I think. Not a boy any longer. She cared for you, Severo. His arms cross before him, freckled and thin. A towel wraps around his waist, another hangs around his shoulders. Golds don't care about nudity, but Severo always has. He's gained a tattoo since last I saw him, a huge black and grey wolf along his back. The howlers are his everything. Once they were just a tool to me. Now I think of them as something more. But what does that mean when I use them just the same? He stares at the water running into the drain of the shower. Down and down it spirals. In the end, I believe I'll enjoy war, he says. Gotta toughen my spine a bit. Callous my hands. Bastards tell us it's all roses and glory. He looks up. Don't you smell the roses, Reaper? I sit beside him on the bench. Did you hear what I said? Course I gory heard you. I'm missing an eye, not an ear. He taps his bionic eye with a bony finger. Course I know she cared, but never in the way I wanted. She deserved to live. If any of us ugly little shit-eaters deserve it, it was her. There wasn't a cruel bone in her body. Not one. But it didn't matter. It doesn't matter if we're good or we're evil. It's all up to chance. It was chance you knew her at all, I say. Chance that brought her to House Mars. No, it was my father, Severo says. He drafted her, traded a pick with Juno to get her. He shakes his head, all because he thought she would temper us, govern our anger. If he hadn't picked her, we wouldn't have met her, and she'd be alive. Maybe, I say, thinking of Io. But she chose to come here. She chose to follow me, to follow you. Just like Pax. I nod, touching my Pegasus. It's all piss and shit, isn't it? Severo says. Doesn't matter how pretty they dress it up. We're still in the game. We're always going to be in a slagging game. Spit on their empire. Spit on this piss and this shit. I came for you because he told me what you are. I stare at him, unable to understand. What do you mean? I ask with a nervous laugh. Turn it on, he says. I know you brought one. You're thorough, Reaper. Always thorough. Why are you acting so... Shut up and turn it on! I nod and activate the device in my pocket. A jam field deploys. I'm not so prideful as the Sovereign to believe no one could listen in. Severo stares at me till I shift uncomfortably. So, what am I? I ask. Even now? He asks, shaking his head. You are wound tight. Say the name of the person who sent me. Mustang sent you. You told me she brought you in from the rim. Same with all the howlers. That's right. She did. Took 6 months to get here from Pluto. But guess who came to me during my layover in Triton? Go on, Reap. Guess. Lorne? His lips curl into a sneer. Fitchner? Severo spits in my face right under the eye. Guess wrong again, and I leave you like this. He snaps his fingers. I will not come back. I will not help you. I will not bleed for you. I will not sacrifice my friends for a man who doesn't give enough of a shit about me to put his neck out just once. Trust goes both ways, Darrow. This time, you have to take a leap. He's not bluffing. And I know what I want to say. But how can it be? Severo is a gold. A bloody damn gold. He heard me say bloody damn to Apollo. He covered it up. Didn't he? Or was that a mistake? Is he trapping me? No. No, if that's true, then the game is already over. Io's dream has failed. Who is closer to me than he. Who loves me more than this strange, nasty outcast? No one. So I look him in his dull gold eyes. Ares sent you. Silence between us. A terrible 5 seconds. 6, 7. He stands and locks the door before pulling a small black crystal from the pocket of his crumpled pants. For your breath only. A whisper jam. I take it tenderly, knowing how much it costs, and blow against its surface. My breath makes it wobble, then shatter. Small motes of black rise, drifting up like fireflies out of the grass as dusk settles in deep summer. They coalesce, floating and forming a rough hollow that hovers between Severo and me. The spiked helmet of Ares.
My son, he warbles, I am sorry. Harmony has betrayed me and initiated a campaign against our principles. I discovered her intended use of you too late, but you were wise. This is why I chose you. Steps are being taken to curb her efforts. Continue with your own. Set Augustus against Bologna and fracture the Pax Solaris.
I try to ask it a question, but it is a recording, made sometime after the gala.
I realize this must be difficult. I have asked too much of you already, but you must carry on. So, Chaos, weaken them. You have much reason to doubt me. We have not contacted you until now, because you were watched by Pliny, by the Jackal, and by the Sovereign spies. Troublemakers breed interest, but I have watched you too, and I am proud. I know Io would be as well. In case you doubt the veracity of this message, a friend would like to say hello. Ares' helmet fades, and Dancer smiles at me.
Darrow, I want you to know, we're with you. Your family is alive and well. The end is coming, my friend. Soon you'll be with us. Till then, trust the man Ares sent. I recruited him myself. Break the chains.
The image erodes, blackish light decaying into the air, and I'm left staring at the shower floor.
You look good for all that surgery, Severo says. His smile is no less nasty than usual. Ares sent that cripple to me, the one who sent you to the Institute, Dancer.
He can't say any more because I'm hugging him and crying. I sob and hold on to him, shaking, scaring him. He doesn't move except to pat me on the head. All the weight falls from my shoulders. Someone knows. He knows and he's here. He knows and he came to help me. To help me. I can't stop shaking and saying thank you. Io was right. I was right.
You are my friend.
I tremble out like a child. It almost makes him cry seeing me this way. A true friend.
Of course, he says haltingly. But only if you stop blubbering, man. We're still goals.
I pull back from him, embarrassed, wiping my face on my sleeve. I think I mumble an apology. My vision's bleary. I sniff. He hands me a towel, which I blow my running nose into. He makes a face.
What? That was for your eyes.
We laugh together, and then sit in an awkward silence. In time, I ask him how long he's known. He suspected something since the Institute, he says, when he heard me say bloody damn to Apollo. My voice went all thick. All rusty. Then Dancer showed him the video of my carving.
Somehow they knew you could trust me,
even if you didn't, shithead. Always been that way. Always will be that way. It doesn't bother you? I ask him.